Welcome to the Gentleman Project Podcast. I'm Corey Moore.
And I'm Kirk Chug. Bruce Greenwald is in the studio with us today. We've known each other for 10 or 11 years. He moved here from Cleveland, plugged into a networking group that I was a part of. And he's been a client and a friend of mine ever since. We've known each other long enough to know some of each other's history. We keep track of each other. And he's been a great friend and a great client for a good decade now. So he's got a great story you're going to be really intrigued by today. Cool family history, wonderful family that I've had the pleasure of meeting. And to tell his story today, Bruce Greenwald, welcome.
I'm so happy to be here. You have no idea.
Well, Bruce, tell us a little bit about your family and a little bit about your kids and who I've had the pleasure of meeting and making some clothing for. That was fun. Tell us a little bit about them and tell people who are listening who you are.
Well, first of all, I forgot that you made my son's, I think, wedding suit.
Yeah, it was wedding suits.
That's amazing, too. I completely forget. You know how long ago that was? That was right after we moved here, which was in 2012.
Yeah.
And that's my oldest son who was married in 2012, Jeff. And I have a younger one who got married last year. His name is Eric. And I moved here from Cleveland in 2012. My late wife and I built a house in Park City. We got lucky enough to come here in 2010 and kind of look at the real estate landscape. And I would say more we came here for the skiing than it was anything else.
What brought you to Utah originally? Was it coming out here for a ski trip and going, well, I really like this here?
We actually did. In 2010, we came out on a ski trip. My wife and I had been to Park City a number of times, and we had clients, actually, of mine who lived out here in a place called Promontory. And we went to Promontory to visit them, and I guess the rest is history. We fell in love with Promontory and bought a lot sight unseen, which is very unusual, and came out here the following summer to go on a biking trip in Bryce and Zion, and came up to Park City and saw what you bought. And you know, my mom, who grew up in the mountains, actually, in Western Maryland, she always wanted me to live in the mountains. And I was very happy to be able to fulfill her wishes.
That's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah. So she grew up in Frederick, Maryland, which is in Western Maryland, right along the Appalachian Trail. That's a whole nother story.
Beautiful area, too.
Which we'll get to about my family history.
So today's a special day for you.
It is.
Would you share why? And we didn't plan this way. It just turned out this way. But tell us why today's special to you.
Well, today is, unfortunately, I lost my late wife 3 years ago today. She had been seriously ill for 6 years with ovarian cancer and fought very, very hard. And we were married for 38 years. You know, she was a trooper. My wife was very involved prior to her sickness in the Pancreatic Cancer Network. In fact, she went around to lobby all of the state senators and congressmen here in Utah when we first came out, because she had lost a cousin to pancreatic cancer. And little did she know, when she went to visit Huntsman Cancer Center the first time, did she know that she would end up there getting chemotherapy for about 5 years. She fought really hard, and we had some great times even while she was ill. We traveled a lot, but she was an amazing woman, such a trooper.
So how did that experience change you, and how did it change your sons?
You know, you live every day. I think we all have to realize that, because we never know when it's going to end. I'll never forget in August of 15 when we first got the first diagnosis of her, having stage 3C, which is a pretty advanced cancer, which is not unusual for ovarian cancer. And you know what my wife and I tried to do from that day, and I would say probably most of our marriage was we tried to live kind of every day. And I think, you know, if that's the message that comes out of here today, that's great. And you know, I wrote my bio, and we can get to this. Is that, you know, that's the way I've really kind of taken on my career too. Is kind of, you know, take some risk, live every day. And there's a lot of people in this world who don't do that. And I think it speaks to the success not only that I had in my marriage, that I had with my kids, but also in my career so far. So
how did that affect your sons, losing their mom? Can you speak to that personally?
Sure. I think they're still figuring it out. They're good boys and, they're great professionals. They're both very successful, professionally, and my oldest son has been married for 10 years. I have two beautiful grandchildren from my oldest son. And my younger son just got married last October. And it's been really difficult for them. And it's been difficult for our relationship, I will say that. They're still, I think, still grieving their mom. But, I think they should think of their mom every day. There's nothing I can do. They have to go through the process themselves. Mm-hmm. I have spoken to a lot of people. I've spoken to a lot of religious leaders who have helped me. A lot of therapy also helps. And, again, they have to kind of come to peace with their mom being gone. It changes the dynamics of a family. There's no doubt about it. Life goes on, and none of us really know kind of how life is going to proceed from the day that you lose somebody. I wasn't planning about talking about this today, by the way.
I think it's valuable. It is valuable if you're willing to share it.
I'm kind of thinking about this as we go along, and it really is. I don't think, first of all, none of us plan for bad things to happen in our lives. And I think dealing with the consequences of not only her sickness, but also dealing with the consequences of her passing, it wasn't something that I really thought about from day to day. It was kind of like I took every day as it came, and you had to deal with the circumstances of not only her sickness, okay, but also the circumstances of kind of what am I going to do after she passes? And I'll give you guys a great example. And one of them being that, like, when she passed away, it was the middle of COVID. It was August of 2020. And in August of 2020, we were only allowed to have 10 people max at her funeral because that's what they would allow inside. And so we had 10 people, but we also had 200 screens from around the world attending her funeral. Wow. And which was an amazing tribute to her. That was probably the first thing that we kind of had to deal with, because people in August of 2020, remember, there were no vaccines or anything. It was kind of the beginning of COVID. And, you know, at the beginning of COVID, none of us knew how to kind of deal with these things. And so from an emotional point of view, my sons and I are putting together this funeral during this COVID era when nobody knew how to behave or do things or whatever. And it was a beautiful ceremony, and that we had all these people through video and everything was just amazing. I don't know how we got on that topic.
We asked.
No, I'm talking about the whole thing.
That had to be hard, though.
Oh, I know what I was saying. What I was talking about was trying, you know, you have to deal with things as they come. And we had to deal with COVID at the time that she passed away. So taking that to the next step, you know, I went away for a couple of weeks after that to kind of get my head together. I went down to Kiawah Island to play golf, which was amazing, and visited my sister who lives in Beaufort, and thought a lot, had to think a lot. And I talked to a lot of friends of mine, and I came back to Park City in the middle of October, and I said, what am I going to do with my life? Because I really hadn't thought kind of forward, because I don't know whether you guys have ever lost, like, a significant other or something, but, you know, you just don't think about it in the moment. And I think that's just human nature. You know, in what I do, I see that. I mean, you know, I try and tell people, you know, you got to think forward. If God forbid something happens, but none of us want to do that at the right. end of the day. In October, middle of October, I'm in this big house. It's the middle of COVID. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do to the rest of my life? And I said, you know what? My wife had been ill for about 6 years. And I said, I'm going to call all of my best friends around the country and tell them, you know, I'm ready to kind of move on with my life. And what did that mean? It meant that I was ready to kind of start maybe meeting another person, maybe dating. Remember, again, I keep on saying, middle of COVID.
Right in the middle.
I mean, we didn't know what was going to happen. It could have been 2 years. It could have been, I mean, we didn't know at the time. I get a call back about 5 days later, and my best friend in Cleveland called me, and they introduced me to this woman who is now my wife, my second wife. We were married a year ago. So
she's wonderful.
Again, never, who would have thought about that at the end of the day, right? So anyway.
So what do you think?
That's a long answer to
your
question.
It's nice to see you happy.
Oh, yeah.
When I'm with you and Natalie, you guys seem very, very happy. So I'm glad that story has taken the turn that it did. Everyone deals with grief in their own way. And sometimes it takes a long, long time. And sometimes to get over it, you know, you find someone that builds you and lifts you up. So that's happened for you.
I was very lucky. I think it's really hard at my age. I'm 65. I just turned 65. And I think it's very difficult to find somebody that you're really a companion with. And I was very lucky that way.
Tell us a little bit about your family history, too, because you've told me some stories about, you know, what makes you who you are. Bruce is a wealth manager and advises people with financial stuff, legal stuff. He's kind of a wizard in that industry, has been very successful doing that. But he's got some really cool family history stories. So talk to some of those stories that are relevant, that make you who you are today, and the person with the values that you have.
Yeah. My family history is really interesting. My new family office is called Rosehaven Family Office, and it's actually named after the name of my grandparents' estate in Frederick, Maryland. My grandparents lived on a 64-acre estate that I used to visit all the time. We used to go up there on the weekends. We lived in Baltimore. It was about a 45-minute drive, and I spent summers there. And it was kind of like, I was trying to think today, this morning before this podcast, that I'm trying to think of the TV show to equate it to. But my parents had like a farm hand who would take us fishing. It was almost like the, I don't know, you guys are too young to probably remember this, the Andy Griffith Show.
Oh, yeah, I remember it.
I could whistle that whole theme song when I was a kid. I rushed home from school to watch that one.
And we would literally go fishing with sticks in our hands on my grandparents' estate. But the history is really interesting. There is a picture in the Smithsonian from Frederick in during the Civil War, and it's of my great great grandfather's store, General Store, Rosenstock was the last name, and they were some of the first Jews who moved to Frederick back in the mid 1800s, and the Confederate Army was marching into Frederick, and there's a picture of the Confederate Army, and my great great grandfather's store was there. So that's how far back my family goes in Maryland. It's interesting because my grandmother, her last name was Kahn, C-A-H-N, and my grandfather's name was Rosenstock, and my grandfather was a famous lawyer in Frederick, and actually helped rewrite the Maryland Constitution back in the mid 1970s. But on my grandmother's side, she grew up in New York, like Great Gatsby. She grew up on Park Avenue. My great grandfather was a famous currency trader, which I happened to do for 20 years, and I did not know this when I started trading currencies. All right. So his firm was bought out by Charlie Merrill of Merrill Lynch, and my family goes back with Charlie Merrill to the mid-1920s. My great-grandfather then started a bank called Mercantile Bank in Delaware. So we were in the banking business for a long time, too. My grandfather was on the board of a bank in Frederick, Maryland, called Farmers and Mechanics. I have to tell you, I talked to my nephew the other day, and what's important about this is that my nephew is a chip off the old block of my great-grandfather. He's been at Merrill Lynch now for 20 years. He's 42 years old. And he runs now one of the largest businesses at Merrill Lynch. And I'm just so proud of him.
It sounds like the family history of great-great-grandpa has trickled down through the generations. And, I mean, you're doing a lot of the same things he is. Does that feel good to you? Do you feel like that's like part of your family history? Do you feel like you know him better through that? Or
did that
play into your decision to do what you do for a living?
I don't think it's anything we all plan about. I think it's in our genetics, but I don't think it's something we plan for. I always had an interest in trading and finance for some reason. My father was a great salesman. He was in the spice business. On my father's side, they were always in the food business. So I didn't really know that much about my grandfather's history, or I'm sorry, my great grandfather's history before I started my career.
Pretty cool old history.
Yeah, it's super cool. Your sons, they in the business, that same kind of business, or not really?
No, my sons are much smarter than I am. So.
Went a little bit different direction.
Yeah, so my oldest son works for Apple, and he's done very well for himself. He's been there 5 years, and before that was with Capital One. He was actually in the finance business, but not in the same way I was. And my younger son is very successful with Salesforce. So they're both kind of in the technology area, but still very good at math. Let me put it that way.
Which is great. Wish I was better at math, actually. So how about mentors in your life? So we talked about your family. Are there some mentors or maybe books that have majorly influenced you that have helped you become who you are today?
Mentors in my life were definitely my father. My father, he was a great guy. And unfortunately, he passed away too early of dementia. It was just too early. I didn't know him for the last 2 years of his life. But, you know, it's funny when I was kind of thinking about this podcast and kind of, you know, who were the mentors in my life. And I would also say my mother was my mentor as well. I wouldn't say I have, like, anybody professionally that would be my mentor, although I would say my nephew is now my mentor. So... because he's been so successful in the business that we both do. But my father was just a really nice man, and he was super motivated. And my mother was I wrote this morning about her involvement in politics. She really did want to change the world, and that was her kind of mantra. But my father, I would say, watching him work hard, he was there on the weekends to coach our little league teams or take us skating. Hard to believe we went skating in Baltimore, but we did. When the weather was a lot different. But I had a pretty good family upbringing, I have to say.
What would you say are some of those values that stick out to you the most that your parents passed on to you?
My parents were, as I said, especially my dad, were hardworking. My mom was always there for us. I mean, it was a different time for kids. You know, we used to go out and we come home from school and we take our bikes and we go out, and we wouldn't come home till 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock.
And when the streetlights came on.
When the streetlights came on, exactly. But my mom was, I kind of had like an Ozzie and Harriet kind of upbringing. My mom, didn't work, so she was home when we got home. And, you know, it was a different life in that, you know, we would come home from school and she would put out like cookies and milk and kind of stupid stuff like that, where you just don't see that today. And I think I'm kind of changing the subject here, but I think that things like that, where we don't see that today, is that I think it allows us as people to kind of grow differently than kind of be in this kind of mindset of you have to go from soccer practice to piano practice to, you know, doing your homework and everything. I think kids today are much more,
overscheduled,
yeah. Regimented, you know, than it was when I was growing up. And I'm sure, you know, if you talk to my father at the same age I was, you know, he would probably say something different about his childhood and how he grew up. But my parents and I would say my grandparents were also my mentors. I know that's kind of crazy, but there's so many things I remember about my grandmother and grandfather, especially on my mother's side. This is the ones that lived in Frederick. But I remember going up, spending summers with them, and just, you know, whether it was going to work with my grandfather, going to get the mail. I mean, and my grandfather owned I'll never forget this Toronado. You probably wouldn't even remember what a Toronado was. I think it was kind of like the Cadillac of that time, you know, back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember the make of it, but I just remember my grandfather being just like one of those guys you just kind of look up to and say, wow, you know.
That's cool.
And my grandmother, on the other hand, was just one of these people that you could talk to about anything. My grandmother lived till she was 94. Okay, just
she has such a good idea.
And lived through the Depression, right?
She did.
Yeah, yeah, that changes people. Yeah. I think it did anyway.
So, I would say, you know, my parents and my grandparents, and I have a sister and brother also, who I think would probably say the same thing. In fact, I was talking to my sister yesterday. My sister's 3 years older, and my sister was always called the princess, and I think my parents favored her a little bit, but that's okay. But I'm really close with her, and we were talking about, she's going back to Maryland, to Frederick, and they had a fair in Frederick, a county fair, which was always mid-September, and we used to always go as kids. And, you know, my grandmother, who lived there, my grandmother was a very good artist. She did a lot of oil painting and won a lot of awards for doing, and she always displayed at the Frederick Fair. Cool. And so we used to go every year, and as kids, and it's amazing what you remember as kids, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys remember stuff as kids? I mean, just crazy stuff, right? Anyway, so my sister's going back to the Frederick Fair for the first time probably in 40 years this
sounds awesome.
September.
So I love the family history part of your story, like that your parents and your grandparents were your mentors, and that you can remember all of those lessons that they taught you, and that, you know, your siblings would say the same thing. How have you taken those things that have been taught to you and passed them on to the next generation and your sons?
Great question. So my kids knew their great-grandparents. Is that right? My grandparents. They knew them, which especially my older son. And they also had a very close relationship with my parents and with my late wife's parents as well. But I think they probably spent more time with my parents. And I think the same values that my parents instilled in me, they also instilled in my two boys. And that's why there is very little divorce in our family. If you go and you look at my grandparents and you look at between my aunt and my mother, they had seven kids. Every marriage is still together. And six of them were married. And then if you look at the grandchildren, every marriage is still together. What are the odds of that?
Not super common these days.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and there, think about the grandchildren. Every marriage is still together.
Yeah. And
that's crazy. There's got to be something behind that.
What do you think that is? Do you think it's like conflict resolution or being able to talk about differences or acceptance of differences, or what value was that has trickled down through those generations that make those marriages strong? Because I think that's something that a listener could say, that's something I'm going to make sure happens in my family.
Well, it's interesting. I have to correct myself. My aunt, my mother's twin sister, did get divorced Okay. But then she got remarried. But other than that, when you look at the grandkids, every grandchild has been in long marriages. And I don't know what the answer is to that. I think it comes back to my grandparents again, because we all kind of grew up on this kind of estate. And this estate was like, you can't make it up. It was like this country estate in the middle of nowhere, and you just had freedom there. And I think that type of freedom and values that my grandparents had was instilled in every one of the grandchildren that are still married. And I would still be married today had I not lost my wife. But, you know, I look at my sister and my brother and, you know, all my cousins. I mean, that's crazy, right? That everybody, that's awesome. And I'm talking 30, 40 years. What is that value? I guess it's probably listening to your spouse. I mean, well, just
communication, I think, right?
I mean, we can go down this road if you want to, but marriage is not easy.
Yeah.
It's a partnership, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
They must have created some kind of a basis of what a good marriage looks like, right? They must have created some kind of a culture in your family that everyone said, well, this is what a good marriage looks like. And we believe, I think sometimes it's like if you grew up and it was rough, well, then that's what you're culturally, that's how you feel a marriage looks like, right? The estate, the good marriage, there was like this vision of what it could be that seems to have cascaded in your family, right? And I'm just kind of thinking out loud, what's the why based on what you told us, you know, and that's what it feels like to me, is that like there was this vision of what it could look like. And that's great. I think anyone wants their family to have like this vision of, this is culturally, this is how it feels, this is what it looks like. And if you can get that embedded in your family culture, I think one of our other guests talked about telling family stories being a really important part of culture in a family. If you can tell these stories,
yeah,
positive stories about this is who we are. Our family is this way. Let me tell you a story about it. And it seems like you have that in your family, in your lineage.
That's also part of what we try and do at our family office, is to talk to other generations about, have one generation talk to another generation to kind of give them more history about what's going on. I'm not saying financially, but more so the values go down from generation to generation. It was one thing that we have found is a difference maker in trying to pass down wealth from one generation to another. And that's one of the more difficult things that I find in my generation, that they have a tough time kind of talking about, you know, the values. Mm-hmm. And if you look at successful families and how they've passed generational, whether it's generational wealth or generational values or whatever, that's one of the most important things. That being said, let me say one other thing about that I need to say about my family. And it's really interesting, because not only did my grandparents own this estate in Frederick, Maryland, but they also owned 4 working farms. And I have no idea how many thousands of acres they owned in Frederick, Maryland, and on these 4 working farms that we used to go visit. And, I mean, we used to take Jeeps out and take them around the property, and, like, it was crazy. It was kind of like probably here in Utah, where you go and, you know, if you have a ranch or something like that, and you just go on for miles. Kirk, you have a ranch, right? You just go on for miles, right? And so that being said, We had all of this land, or my grandparents did, on both sides of the family in Frederick, and eventually it all got sold. Unfortunately, at the wrong time, because Frederick blew up in the 1980s as a suburb to Washington, D.C., and the land values went from basically nothing to God knows what they are today. Mm. I think values are really important, and I do think, I mean, we could get on to this, but I don't think it's appropriate for this podcast about, you know, the financial side of, you know, why financial decisions are made in many families, especially for generational wealth.
Yeah. You have a really well-rounded worldview because you've traveled a lot and you've also lived in a lot of different places. Talk to us about how living in different places around the world has shaped your worldview of humanity and the type of person that you've chosen to be.
So not only do I have the fortune of having an amazing family history, but I've also been able to kind of make my own history over time. I started in the banking business in 1980 in Cleveland, but went into the trading business. I traded currencies, as I said earlier, and I was lucky enough at a young age, to age 28, my wife and I, my older son, who was a year and a half at the time, we were moved to Sydney, Australia. And we were able to be in Australia probably well before Australia got on the map as a really, you know, significant player in the world today. And so we lived there, and then that was in 1985, so I was 28, and we lived there for about a year, came back. We lived in New York, so we lived in New York for a couple of years, and then I was asked to come back to Cleveland to run a trading room for British Petroleum. And BP was obviously a British-based company, and in 1992, they tapped me on the shoulder and said, "We want you to move to London." I was like, okay. My kids were 7 and 4 at the time, and it was a great experience for them, so they were able to get the experience of being in London. And they still remember it. It's hard to believe that even my younger son, who was 4 years old at the time, still remembers going to Montessori school there. So we lived in Kensington in London and traveled all over Europe, actually, for the year we were there. And then we came back, and we were in Cleveland for quite a long time, although I used to travel to Europe all the time with BP, and they also used to send me to Australia because we had a big trading arm down in Melbourne. So I was pretty familiar both with London, Europe, and Australia. And, you know, I always say I was very lucky to be able to be in those different places of the world and kind of see as a young person at that time to see all of these different opportunities and places.
I think when you see the world, it changes who you are and how you see things and the way you act. And it's just opened your eyes.
It's good for kids too. I don't know if you remember, David Gilliland was taking his kids to Brazil. Yeah. Well, I spoke at one of his conferences last week and I asked him how it was. And he's just like, "I'm an amazing experience." Like, we had to get there and find shelter, find food. Like, they were, and you know, those types of experiences of taking your kids down to, you know, Australia and London and these things have probably shaped them into the men that they are today because of those experiences. So I think if you're listening to the podcast and, you know, what can I take away from this? I'd say, you know, give yourself an opportunity, give your kids the opportunity to see things outside the bubble that they might live in, so that they can develop a worldview that's, diverse and that they can know how other people live and understand other cultures. I think that's a really important part of being a good world citizen. So, well, we're out of time. Corey, you want to ask our guest of honor the question of the day?
It's a good question. And he very much looks like a gentleman today, by the way. He looks very dapper.
I'm dressed in Kirk Chug clothes, of course, the haberdasher.
And when you said you were 65, I was surprised because I thought 55, maybe. Look very good for your age.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you do, but I'm going to have to write it down after the podcast.
It's called short hair. It's called no hair.
His barber's been busy.
That's right. So, sir, what does it mean to you to be a gentleman?
I think being a gentleman is just being a good person. I think it's doing the right thing always. I think there's so many people in this world I don't understand, and my wife and I shake our heads about it all. My wife Natalie and I shake our heads about it all the time. Is that there are so many good people in this world, but there's so many people that you kind of question about how they got to where they are, and I think being a good person, I think always doing the right thing is really our mantra. Do the right thing. You have to have a philosophy of having a goal of where you want to kind of be in life. And, I always say you do what you have to do, all right? To survive in life, you do what you have to do. And what people may take away from this podcast today is that, hey, this guy's had a great life, but he's also had adversity and he's been able to get through the adversity. The reason I've gotten through the adversity is, as I started out on the podcast today, is you live every day, all right? You do what you have to do and you be a good person.
Love it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce.
You're welcome.
We appreciate you coming in today.
And thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Gentleman Project podcast today. If you heard something today that Bruce said that impacted you that you might pass on to someone else, it might help them, please do so. Act on each good thought. I'm Kirk Chug.
And I'm Corey Mora. Thanks for joining us.